Just to make sure, it's Hans de Lanier.
Yeah, I don't know how you want to pronounce it, but it's not pronounceable in English.
Hey, Veeam Community Podcast listeners, are you new to virtualization and data protection? If so, check out Backup Academy. Veeam has sponsored Backup Academy to provide web-based training and certification resources for virtualization and data protection technologies. We've also launched a new session from Greg Shields, Multi-Site Clustering for Hyper-V Disaster Recovery. Check out this track and more at backupacademy.com.
Hello and welcome to the Veeam Community Podcast. I'm your host, Rick Vanover. This is episode 53! Can you believe it? Sorting through all the vendor storage FUD. Here we go. Today, my guest is Hans de Lanier. How you doing, Hans?
Hi, Rick. Fine. Thank you.
And Hans, you're based in Belgium. Can you tell everyone a little bit about yourself?
I work for Ferranti. It's a value-added reseller in Belgium. We are a partner for HP, Gold Preferred Partner, and the only premier partner for Dell in Belgium. So we do server storage, but besides that also networking security, blah, 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 and management and virtualization projects.
So a little bit of everything. And
yeah.
The distinguished only, in this case, Dell premier partner in Belgium is kind of funny because here at Veeam, we have one person based in Belgium, Stephen Dukart. And Stephen always likes to come up and say, yes, I'm the only Veeam employee in Belgium.
The only Veeam employer in Belgium.
Yeah, well, we've got a whole region there, the Benelux. So actually, it's they took one region out. I don't know. But he always likes to qualify that as the only in Belgium.
Yeah.
So cool, and you're also on Twitter at Hans de Lanier, and I'm going to put this in the podcast notes so everyone can follow you on Twitter. You, I really appreciate the way you engage on Twitter, and that's actually how I decided to reach out to you, Hans. Basically, we were talking about storage, right? We've got all these different storage things, metrics, right? Dollars per gigabyte, dollars per IOPS, euros per IOPS in your case maybe. How do you go about helping people understand what the heck to buy for storage? Because it's a very complicated task, right? You know, there's a lot of numbers, there's a lot of marketing. How do you help out that person when they go about trying to buy storage?
Yeah, it's different when you look from the point of view of the customer than you look at it from the point of view of the vendor. The vendors look at it and say that we have this amount of IOPS of, or this amount of terabytes, but the customer eventually wants to buy something that has good value for money. Okay. And what a lot of these vendors nowadays do, they get this huge amount of IOPS out of one single box, but does the customer need that, and do they need to pay that amount of money for it? So I started using those dollar per IOPS and dollar per gigabytes. One year ago it started after that screwed up or benchmark from EMC. You remember that one?
Well, it's
that
almost unrealistic.
Unrealistic. If you look back now, they broke the record with, I think, what was it, 500,000 IOPS. That was their record. They did 30% more than others, but they needed 400 flash disks for it, yeah, for only 70 terabytes. So that's when I asked myself, can they break these records with that amount of money? Is that a good story for the customer? No, it is not. So I started with all my own, the products we do, so products from Dell and HP, I started listing them up and what do I sell to the customer? What does this cost? Dollar per IOPS and dollars per gigabyte. And now last week, when we were talking about this, you said, oh yeah, I like it that somebody is using that in the field, those two numbers across each other. Then somebody else, I don't remember who it was, he added, yeah, but there are also other metrics you need to use. And, okay, how far do we need to go with that benchmarks? Do we need to add watts per terabyte, watts per IOPS? How big in unit sizes on the rack? unit sizes per terabyte, unit sizes per IOPS, because if you want to compare a product, one product to another, you want to compare everything.
Yeah, and you bring up a good point about how many metrics, because it then becomes, in my opinion, too complicated for the average customer.
Yes.
Not to say that we're not smart enough, it's just that we don't have the time to dig up all these different things. Uh-huh. So one of them about the space, for example, I can't remember a couple years ago, but there was a focus group at one of the storage industry convention type things. And they were saying that one of the biggest advocators to push solid-state storage is IOPS per floor tile, okay? and that's a stat, right? Because how much can you drive out of this much space in your data center? Because
But then we're back to the EMC benchmark.
Exactly, I know.
Four VNXs with 400 flash disks. Nobody uses an entire rack of flash disks. It costs a few million.
Yeah, I know. I'll be honest with you, and you have a better sense of this, right? Do you see people buying arrays of flash storage, or do you see tiering solutions?
Tiering solutions, yes.
Okay.
If you're buying now a storage product that does not have some kind of tiering inside it, you're buying rubbish.
Mm-hmm.
Because... And that's one of the questions I have now for myself in my work. Everything that we sold 3 years ago, how much is it worth today? The customer bought it for, let's say, 4 or 5 years, but all those arrays are now obsolete. But we're only 3 years further.
Yeah.
So what's going to happen in 3 years? What are we selling things now for 5 years that are going to be there in 5 years?
Yeah, that's a good point.
If you're buying now, what my point was is if you're buying new storage now, don't buy old solutions. And with old solutions, I mean static solutions like, I'm sorry to say, an EVA. Even the new HP EVA is not new.
Right.
It is the same solid thing. You can change the rate, yeah, for an entire volume.
That's a good point. It's kind of scary to think right now how, you know, you plan to use this piece of kit for 5 years, 4 years. What's storage going to be like then? Wow, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And that's where you asked me, are customers buying entire shelves of SSD? Shelves, yes.
Mm-hmm.
But in a solution where you got sublim tiering, where you got all those nifty things that are now on the market, and I see that in, let's say, 3-bar Compellent, but also in for example Equalogic. You can buy an Equalogic with only SSDs. You can buy them in hybrid solutions with 7 SSDs and 17 HDDs.
Mm-hmm.
And these are the things we see in the field. You can use those enclosures maybe for VDI solution, but not for your entire environment.
Right. Well, that's an interesting observation. Now, I'm not super versed on Equalogic. We have one in our lab that I administer for a couple things going on.
Mm-hmm.
But I didn't know you could do that with SSDs. And honestly, that sounds like a great solution right now because they're easy to use. They're not incredibly expensive, Equalogics are. And they've got all the support.
Equalogic is cheap.
Well, yeah, I mean it's where you want to be in
the
price spot.
It's good worth of money.
Exactly.
I have this pre-sales sheet with all the models of Equalogic, and I tell the customer, you know what, choose two of them. Just choose two of them, and in a year we're going to evaluate what you've used through the monitoring, and we'll add something that goes well with your environment. We buy cheap 7.2K disks, or you buy an entire shelf of an SSD, put them in the same group,
mm-hmm.
present it at the same one IP number, and you're set.
Yeah, that's
incredibly
simple.
It does the tiering for you. It does the tiering for you. You don't have to do anything with it. You want to go farther with it. You want to make profiles and stuff like that. Okay, then go to Compellent or 3-bar stuff.
Right. Well, there you go. So you're making it simple for me. That's why I brought you on. Because it's tough to sort through the storage, and I think that with this example right here, this dispels one myth that I've had, and that you have to spend big money, big, you know, traditional, you know, those top four and five storage names, right? The IBM, 3PAR, HDS, and I like them all, right?
But I work in Europe, and I work in one of the smallest countries of Europe. So my customer, if I tell you what a, you know what an SMB customer is? How big can an SMB customer be for you before it gets to enterprise? How many seats?
Well, yeah, it's...
How many seats is your smallest enterprise customer?
Oh, the two-host VMware environment.
Oh, that's that's small.
Yeah.
But I mean in seats. We say enterprise customers from maybe 300 to 400 to 500 seats. That's small if you talk to Americans.
Yeah.
So we are used to selling small stuff. Mm-hmm. Yeah? We're used to selling to the SMB market. And who uses 95% of what a product is capable of? You don't. When you hit the 60-75%, you just buy another.
Yeah, that's a lot easier to scale out that way than scale up, especially for the SMB. I think that having the features, though, available to the SMB is very critical.
Because mm-hmm.
they have the same problems, right? And who's to say that VDI, for example, isn't for the SMB? So I think that it's very good that we can have low-cost, good tiering solutions like what we just talked about available to the SMB that's easy to use, right? It just defeats the purpose if it's too complex or price-wise unattainable, but I just had an epiphany of sorts. It's so flipping easy. That's pretty attractive.
Mm-hmm. But you can even make it more easy nowadays. Look at what is coming, and that's why I told you 2 minutes ago that what is going to happen in 3 years. If you look now at solutions like Fusion.io and SCSI Express, what's going to happen to storage? We're only going to buy cheap disks
mm-hmm.
because we're getting the IOPS back to the closer to the CPU.
That's true. I just was talking about SCSI Express the other day. Funny you say that.
Mm-hmm.
I think, though, that the thing that's going to make that happen is controller software that makes it bridge the gap between a little bit of high-speed SSD-type disk and then...
Yeah, okay. We're not there yet with the SCSI Express, but we are there with Fusion.io, for example.
Sure.
Yeah, I had this discussion 2 days ago with Chris Evans, I think it was, where I said, why isn't Fusion already bought by IBM, HP, or Dell? This should have been bought and put in all the servers. This would have changed the servers market.
Sure, I agree. I'm not too familiar with it, but definitely I think that Chris knows what he's talking about. So I agree with whatever he said. So he knows his stuff way better than me in this arena.
No, I was arguing it should have happened already.
Okay.
He was asking me why I said that, because I think if we can mainstream flash on the motherboard, we don't need those 5,000 IOPS flash based storage arrays anymore.
Sure. What about another piece of advice that you might give people that are making storage decisions? What do you tell them are some of the other important things? Ease of use, manageability, features. Are there any other big categories? And then, of course,
yes.
Performance. What else do you talk about?
Well, ease of use is, of course, for us, it's very important in the SMB market. But also, and that's something for the storage vendors. Make sure that every product you have is manageable through third parties. And what I'm thinking of is the system center.
Sure.
So now every new product they bring on the market should have SMIS, because that's going to be the base to provision your storage from the system center stack.
Really? So like a system center management pack that would integrate?
Like have all those vSphere plugins that they're making, vCenter plugins for the storage, that should be there for the system center.
So the vSphere admin would be able to, within the vSphere client, do all of his storage stuff in that tool. Okay.
You can provision your disks without going to the array.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I guess if I'm a one-person shop, that's nice to have everything in that one tool. If I'm a medium business, I might not want. Well, I guess it's a plug-in.
Why not?
Right? So, well,
why not?
I just don't want...
let the storage guys create profiles for you and say, you know what, you can provision LUNs of this big on that kind of storage SSD, 15K, 10K, and you can choose from that, from those profiles.
Well, it comes down to when the storage administrator needs to do some maintenance, and they move it around, and then other stakeholders have that information to see that, oh, you've moved me to lower tier disk. I'm going to find a problem or something like that. And the storage administrator reserves the right to do that type of stuff. But I think that just creates noise in the environment, especially if maybe the app owners get a hold of it too. Then they're going to start complaining about the move. And maybe it's legit. I'm moving arrays or something like that, and you got to be here temporarily until I can move you back to your end state. But I just worry about – maybe I've had too many bad experiences where people have done things, and they were fully within their realm, but then – the information comes out, and it's just stuff I have to deal with. Maybe I'm being dramatic. I don't know.
Yes. Okay. Yes, you are. We move around apps and virtual servers over all our hosts. Nobody minds about that anymore. It's about SLAs. If I give you an SLA on your VM, there you have it. That's all you need. And that's the same for storage. I ask you storage in that tier, that kind of profile that costs me that dollar per month. Why not?
Well, let me give you an example of a situation I had in the past. Application owner A had a big fancy application, and we bought them some fancy storage for it. All good. Well, then the issue was that the application... had the storage all to themselves, but they weren't using it all. And it was tier one storage. So we put a couple other applications in there. And then they found out about it, and they said, no, we bought that storage. Okay, I'm only using 10% of the available space. I want it all to myself because I paid for it, right? And I just don't want to deal with those political things. That's the type of example I've got in my head. And if we just make the information more available to people, I don't know.
Yeah, but you sold the storage to them for 100%.
Mm-hmm.
That's your mistake, not theirs.
Oh, gosh. Fair point. They bought it, and their long-term growth would have maybe taken it to halfway full. But, I don't know.
It's all about working together, making good statements that I sell you this storage that is that fast for that amount of money.
Yeah, and the funny thing was, though, we couldn't identify any impact of doing that, right? So if anything, we were just using what we had better rather than adding more stuff, right? So these were systems that actually would have no impact on tier one storage. Then the question is, why were they there? And actually the answer was because I was reprovisioning tier two storage. And I needed a place to hold them, right? So it's just dealing with the drama of that. Maybe it's just the people I've worked with.
We do the same already with CPU and RAM.
People aren't as finicky about that because CPU and RAM are pretty flat, meaning there's no polar difference like there is with storage, okay? So, and to measure the oversubscription of those two is a lot harder than... to determine a neighbor in storage, I guess is what I'm trying to say.
Yeah.
And usually I've got plenty of CPU overhead, and RAM is managed pretty well, especially in VMware. So it's just that you can get in a lot... I think you can get into trouble quicker with storage. I think there's a paranoia around that.
Mm-hmm.
What about when it comes to the, longer term? And when you brought this up earlier that, if we buy storage now... we have to think about 3, 4, 5 years. Are you telling people in any situations maybe to wait a year or look for some stopgap solutions? Have you had to have that type of discussion?
I I don't tell customers to wait a year. If they need a solution, you give the solution. But I, for example, for existing customers, I tell them at least 1 year up front that, you know what, that array is going to be 3 to 4 years next year. Maybe we need to look at what's going to happen in a year and not afterwards when, you know, when we are 2 months before the care pack ends, mm-hmm. look into new storage, but looking for the profile of storage you need. But there's going to happen so much that at some point you need to take the decision of choosing something. If I would buy now and have the opportunity to wait, I would wait for example, a better metrics at dedupe ratio. There are new benchmarks coming every month. Dedupe ratio is a benchmark that is not out there that much. Do you know what the new DR4000 of Dell or the store ones from HP, what they do with, as a dedupe ratio? Yeah, they say between 4 to 1 and 15 to 1. Yeah, that's a lot. That's not a benchmark
that's
for
the
same product.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. I know. It has to do with the data, of course.
Right.
But at some point, I want to sell that product and tell the customer, you know what, you need one of 9 terabytes or 20 terabytes. But if you say the ratio is 4 to 1 or 15 to 1, that's big.
Yeah.
That's a big difference. And there are other metrics coming on. What about rehydration speeds?
Yeah.
Stuff like that. There's a lot of new things coming. And if you can wait, you can keep on waiting. At some point, you need to choose.
The thing about a deduplication, and actually next week I'm going to work on, we got a partner arrangement with Dell. I'm going to be doing some stuff with the DR4000, so I'll get to see it a little bit more.
Yeah, I need those numbers fast.
But, you know, dedupe's a funny thing. You can't have a blanket rule, right? And
mm-hmm.
In fact, I've done this. At Veeam, right? Because Veeam has dedupe on backups.
Mm-hmm.
I've set up some, you know, what I call the academic example, right? That just gives a just ridiculous amount of deduplication, but it's not really that real world, okay?
No.
So
you need in the world examples.
Exactly.
We've tested it on this kind of customer. We've tested it on this kind of customer, and it does that. I don't want to know how far you can dedupe.
Right.
I want to know what it does in the field.
Right. Well, that's A dedupe's a very passionate area. I think, do you see a lot of people wanting more dedupe, especially on backup storage, or?
I want it.
You want it? Okay.
Yeah, because customers are buying storage, buy disks and disks and disks for disk-to-disk backup, and maybe they don't need that. They don't need a whole lot of spindles. If they got a decent dedupe ratio, we take less space, and we put more backups on it.
What do you tell people on backup storage, right? Because if they use lower cost primary storage, right, so SATA
mm-hmm.
disks for backup storage, it's not a deduplication type of device.
Mm-hmm.
In theory, you're going to get better performance than you would a dedupe system, right, that has software that manages the dedupe, has less stuff, less disks, but in theory can hold more of it because of the deduplication. What do you tell people, right? Is it a trade-off of performance and space? Or how do you answer that question for people?
Well, I don't know how much it's going to do on the speed and how much impact has the dedupe on your performance. That's another ratio again.
Yeah.
That's another benchmark. It's the hydration and the rehydration speed. How fast can you backup? How fast can you recover? Even more interesting. We don't know it now at this point, so we are still selling disks and disks and disks for backup.
Well, and honestly, if I had my way, I like primary class of storage for backup targets. And small Veeam commercial, it's just really because what we do with backups are not normal, right? We push more out of the backup and therefore out of the backup storage. So, you know, that's why I kind of, if people don't have a preference, I push them to, you know, find a affordable primary class of storage, you know, a non-dedupe target and go that way.
No, but I'm not choosing between VM and dedupe appliances. You got to use VM to back up to a dedupe appliance.
Yeah.
Because then you can get it to the other side of the world in minuscule pieces.
Yeah, like when you can have, and that's another thing, like replication of backup targets, that stuff is really smart. Okay, it's very efficient. I do like that, especially for, you know, in our examples, that's one of the best ways to get stuff off site. Quickly and up to date, and you have, in many cases, revisions of a file system, right? So you can kind of go back in time for those backups. So the features are out there, right? And that's the hard part, determining which features you want, what features can you afford, and then outside of the storage realm, you know, the bandwidth to deliver them, right? Because
yes, that's a big one.
Yeah.
You want a disaster site, okay? Your disaster site has to have this amount of fibers between them. Wait a second. You see what I'm going to?
That's expensive when you say fiber between.
Yes. how are we making disaster sites now? Well, we're doing it, for example, with left hand. Active sites.
Right. There is DR.
There is no DR. It's just active on two sites. Your storage stays online. But even if you do active-passive asynchronous replications, it still needs to get the entire volume of data over that line.
That's true.
And if you do a net on the one, I would rather have it deduped.
True.
As far as possible.
See, Hans, you're making me think, and it's way too late in the day for you to think, and for me, it's getting late in the day as well. I want to focus over, a couple questions are going to change gears a little bit. Do you blog anywhere? I think, by the way, you're a smart guy. You really should.
It's my name, .blogspot.com. Type in my name now in the URL.
Okay.
Type in Hans Dahlin here.
Okay, gotcha. I'll put that in the podcast notes because I've really enjoyed our conversation here tonight, Hans. And I do want to transition to my gimmick, my other part of the podcast, which I call, three views from you. I'm going to ask you three questions poised in different points in time. And we're going to start with the past. So Hans, is there a technical story or an experience that you can share with us from your past that would be a good story to tell everyone?
Well, it's not a good story for me, but it is a good story to tell. I tell it all the time because I learned something from it. So at this time, there was a customer with an EVA 4400. Yeah. And there was a broken disc. We replaced the disc, and the rebuild took days and days. And it just didn't get further than 80% or something like that. So we call HP, and they said, that's not an issue. You can solve it through a resync of the controllers. That's some kind of a 4-digit hexadecimal code you need to do. And it can be done by, and HP said, you know what? We're going to send you, an engineer to do that for you. Or do you want it you want to do it yourself? I said, you know what? 4 digits. I'm doing it myself. Are you hearing where I'm going here?
Yes, sure.
Yeah. So it was an easy thing. It just needed a resync of the controllers. It was a bug, a known bug. And if the customer would have had new firmware, it wouldn't have been an issue, blah, blah, blah. So I do the 4 digits and I change 2 of them in the order. And what did I do? Instead of resyncing the controllers, I cleared the controllers.
Ouch.
Yeah, it's the same 4 digits, only in another order. So instead of doing just a small resync between the controllers, I emptied something that shouldn't be empty, and the EVA got stuck somewhere, and I didn't know what happened.
Well, that's crazy.
Yeah, so I think I was with the customer over 48 hours to get that in line again. We had up until level 2, 3, 4 at HP, until somebody could read ones and zeros to get it sorted out. So what did I learn of that? If you're not sure about it, if you haven't done it before, just don't do it.
I had a story.
The second thing that I learned of it, and this is even in my line of work, it's very important, it's that everybody makes mistakes. Be prepared for that. So be prepared to forgive someone's mistakes, but also bear in mind that the biggest mistakes are going to happen through the hands of the engineer and not from the array.
Oh, true. People mistakes are definitely the biggest category. I had one of those just this week myself where we did something. The interface didn't protect us from it, but we ended up sending an illegal IO command to the storage controller, and so...
How can you send an illegal IO?
Well, I'm summarizing what happened, right? We did something we shouldn't have done, and it caused the... it just locked up the storage controller. It hasn't been a good week for me. Let's just leave it at that. Let's move on to the present, Hans. What's going on right now that you have the most passion for technology-wise that you can share with us?
We've talked about it. It's nowadays, dedupe is on my mind. Dedupe and archiving and selling less disks for more volume. How nice is that? And even going further, if you take that VM together with the store ones or the DR4000, why not making DR as a service?
Yeah. Well, yeah, I think that if you can just, as a general rule, use your storage efficiently, because you can quickly get into trouble into over-purchasing storage, right? That's pretty easy to do.
Don't overpurchase storage. Not do that.
Yeah, so...
buy what you need today and add what you need tomorrow.
Take it from Hans. How about into the future, Hans? What do you see coming down the pike technology-wise that you're most interested in or you think is going to be the next big thing?
Well, the cloud, I don't want to mention the cloud, but not again.
No cloud.
Yeah, it's cloudy. Yeah. No, storage and the cloud, where is that going to go? Are we going to virtualize the storage over all our kinds of arrays? What's going to happen there? That's a question I have. All this private hybrid clouds we are selling today, is that going to be the solution that needed to be there in 3 to 4 or 5 years from now? And the last one, what is really on my mind is in our company, we have networking security management, and we have the Iron Man selling servers and storage. How many Iron Men will we need in a few years in the SMB market if everything's going to the cloud?
That's a good point. It might be a shrinking market then.
Yeah, especially in the small business market. I don't know why customers would buy servers in 3 to 5 years.
Well, the local compute endpoint might still be important. I don't know. I mean... It really comes down to the app, right? If you can go to cloud apps for everything, then you don't really need everything on-prem.
So, voila.
Yeah.
If you have an iPad or a phone or a tablet or anyone, you only need connection. That's all you need today. Right. And the app is not going to be in your environment. The only reason why you would have your own hardware is because of compliancy.
Well, that and if the speed and latency, right? If you need it super quick or if it's a lot of data that comes in real quick. I mean, there's a lot of exceptions, but I think in every decision point with an app, people have a choice of going to the cloud today. So,
how many data comes to your client? Nothing.
Yeah, 1%, you know.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Stuff to think about. Hey, Hans, I do appreciate you taking the time to be on the podcast today.
No problem.
I definitely welcome you back, and we'll talk about all kinds of stuff. I appreciate it. I'm going to put links to your Twitter feed and to your blog in the podcast notes. Once again, Hans, thanks for being on.